American muckraking journalist H.L. Mencken once described a Puritan this way, as a man who was upset that somebody somewhere was happy. Well, if you know anything about the real Puritans and their spiritual cousins, that is, the Pilgrims, you know that that's really not true at all. The Puritans and the Pilgrims made very significant contributions to America and a lot of the freedoms that we enjoy and often take for granted. There's a whole chapter dedicated to them in a new book called Proclaim Liberty Throughout All the Land, How Christianity Has Advanced Freedom and Equality for All Americans. The author is Dr. Mark David Hall, whom we've had on as a guest before to provide an overview for the book. Dr. Mark David Hall teaches at Regent University and also at George Fox University. He's also a senior fellow at Baylor University's Institute for Studies of Religion. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and we welcome back Dr. Mark David Hall to the program. Dr. Hall, thanks again for joining us. We appreciate that.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Jerry.
Sure. Well, unfortunately, the average American today, if they know anything about the Puritans, it's almost all negative stuff like the witchcraft trials or, Scarlet Letter or things like that. But there's another side to that story, isn't there?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right, and that's a great starting point. I think most Americans come to the Puritans through reading Nathaniel Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter or Arthur Miller's The Crucible, and both of these are just highly, highly biased books. And then most academic treatments that you might find, for instance, in a U.S. history book, similarly describe the Puritans as mean-spirited theocrats who were worried that someone somewhere was having fun and they wanted to kill witches and Quakers. And that's just a very misleading description of the Puritans. One of the first things we should say is these are products of the 17th century. So when we look at them, we shouldn't expect to see 21st century liberal Democrats. So they certainly hold some views that we would justly condemn today. But as you know, the Puritans are English Protestants who wanted to purify the Church of England. When they couldn't get as far as they wanted in England, the Pilgrims came over to America, to Massachusetts Bay in 1620, and they were followed by the Puritans, these great waves of English Protestants who came over here to look to the Bible, to create a city on a hill. And much of what they did is entirely laudable.
Okay, what's the difference between a Pilgrim and a Puritan?
So the Pilgrims were separatists. They believed each congregation should govern itself. The Puritans were perfectly happy with the idea of a national church. They just thought it should be a reformed, a Calvinist national church. The Pilgrims got here first. They were followed by the Puritans. But as a number of good scholars have argued, even though the Pilgrims were smaller in number, they ended up having a greater influence. So throughout New England, Congregationalism was the rule. So each congregation governed itself. And think about what this means. You have, let's say the minister dies, the congregation comes together and they have a discussion, maybe even an argument. Who should be the next minister? And then what do you do to decide the question? You take a vote, and then you call a particular person to be minister. That sounds a lot like democracy, doesn't it? Freedom of speech, elections, and so forth. And so the Puritans are doing this throughout their churches, throughout all of New England, and this spills over into politics. And so New England, you have the famous New England town meeting where members of the town come together, and they argue with each other, and they vote. And they decide things in a democratic fashion. Now, you do have colonial governments, but these almost all of the officers are elected, usually for 6-month terms. And so you're always having elections, and people who are displeasing to the population can be voted out. You really have some of the most Republican institutions the world had ever seen. And by Republican here, I mean small r Republican, democratic, and yet it wasn't a mob rule sort of democracy. They had the rule of law and strict limits on what the people could do.
And it's my understanding that they would even have election day sermons. So here they have elections on a far more frequent basis than we do, although lately it seems like we're having elections every other year, or not even that. I mean, it's always in the news. But tell us about the election day sermons and how they were so frequently used.
Yeah, I'll take a small step back and point out that in the 17th century, literally everyone in the European world, Catholics and Protestants alike, thought that civic magistrates should cooperate with Christian ministers to protect and promote true Christianity. Now, the church and the state are definitely separate institutions. There's no question about that, but the two could cooperate. And so, for instance, sometimes under the guidance of the ministers, very dangerous sects from the Puritans' perspective, the Jesuits most notably, would be banned from the colony. As well, although they tolerated dissenters, they didn't tolerate the teaching of heresy. And so if you were to publicly teach heresy, you could be punished. A good example of this cooperation, as you point out, is Election Day sermon. And it's not just a sermon on Election Day. What happens after the big election? All the elected magistrates would come together, let's say in Boston or Cambridge, and all of the members of the established, all the ministers of the established church would come together, and the ministers would select one of their members to give an Election Day sermon where he would remind the magistrates of their duty under God to protect the people, to rule justly and wisely, and this sort of thing. This Election Day sermon would almost always then be printed and distributed throughout the land. And so that's a great example, I think, where you clearly recognize ministers are not elected officials are not ministers, but it's perfectly appropriate to come together to help create a Christian commonwealth. The civic authorities, in fact, were pulling from a kind of odd language in Isaiah 51. The civic magistrates were called the nursing mother of the church, by which they mean it would be something that would support, encourage, and nourish the church, but not run the church. We don't want the government running the church. That was a bad idea back then, just as it's a bad idea today.
How important was the Bible in Puritan New England?
Oh, the Bible was what was the key book. In fact, it was very important that everyone be able to read the Bible, right? So these Puritans are children of the Protestant Reformation with the doctrine of sola scriptura, scripture alone, and the priesthood of all believers. Well, if you put those two together, you kind of have a need for literacy, right? Everyone has to be able to read the Bible for himself. And so this is one of the ways in which civic authorities encouraged Christianity. They required every parent to ensure that their children knew how to read, and they required every family to have a copy of the Bible and a copy of the Catechism. And if you could not afford one, one would be appointed, one would be provided to you, to your family, by the selectmen, by the local government within the within the city or the town. And oftentimes then what would happen is Puritans would pool the resources and hire the minister or someone else to teach the children. So I'm not saying every family was homeschooling. They would have basically local Christian schools. And then the state also stipulated that if you're a town of a certain size, you have to have a grammar school, which in our day means one thing. Back then it meant a school for teaching Latin in Greek and sometimes Hebrew. And these languages were necessary if you were to go to Yale or Harvard or the other institutions of higher learning that they created. And so what you see really very, very early on in Puritan New England is almost universal male literacy. Female literacy is skyrocketing in a way that we don't see anywhere else in the world. You have some of the most educated ministers, again, the world had ever seen. There's a lot worse places you could be than Puritan New England.
You mentioned Harvard and Yale. Elaborate on that. And they started Dartmouth as well and other schools of higher learning.
So they absolutely believed in the necessity of an educated ministry. You have priesthood of all believers. Everyone's required and should be able to read the Bible for himself or herself. But just like today, many of us go to churches where we sit under the tutelage of someone who knows the scripture better than us. I took a little Greek in college. I don't remember it. So it's real useful when the minister can go to the original Greek and explain why this word might mean this and how it might be applied in this way. And they believe the exact same thing. And so Harvard, Yale, Dartmouth eventually became this, Brown much later, were schools of higher education, a major purpose of which was to train ministers, but that wasn't their only purpose. You had plenty of people going to Harvard and going out and becoming merchants or becoming attorneys or that sort of thing. But at least a major purpose of these institutions of higher education was to produce an educated clergy, an educated ministry. And I don't think anywhere else in the world do you have a similarly well-educated ministry as you had in Puritan New England.
John Calvin died in 1564. He was buried in an unmarked grave in Geneva. By his choice, he wanted it unmarked so that nobody would ever, you know, create an idol or something like that. He even once said famously that the human heart is an idol, I-D-O-L, factory. It's my understanding that some of John Calvin's thinking and writings and so forth was influential in Puritan New England. What are your comments?
Yeah, no, absolutely it was. So as late as 1776, something like 50 to 75% of Americans of European descent are members of Reformed or Calvinist traditions. Now, in New England, that would oftentimes manifest itself in the Congregationalist Church. You do have Presbyterian churches up north, but then you have these great waves of Scotch-Irish that go to Pennsylvania and South Carolina and elsewhere. You had French Huguenots, and you have Baptists, which back in this era were fairly Calvinist. Now, of course, they're drawing from John Calvin, but they're also drawing from the broader tradition of Reformed thinkers. The author Wigandicchio Cantos Tyrannos, Buchanan, Poney, and others, and they were swimming in the sea of Reformed theology. Jonathan Edwards has a great discussion of the extent to which he's a Calvinist. Basically, he says, well, I admire and revere the work of John Calvin, but ultimately, as a Christian, my ultimate guide for faith and practice is the Holy Bible. And I think that shows really what's going on. These Calvinists are looking to the Bible primarily for guidance, and they're perfectly happy to read the Institutes of the Christian Religion to get ideas, but they're not going to defer to John Calvin as if he had discovered all truth and there was nothing else to be learned after him.
All right, excellent. Okay, now let's talk about ecclesiology, the actual church structure. You mentioned that a lot of the Puritans coming out of England, so technically they would be Anglicans who had stayed within the Anglican church working for its purity, but when they came over to America, they didn't just say, okay, we're going to go ahead and start the Anglican church here in Massachusetts and these different places. As opposed to, you mentioned earlier, congregationalist form. So comment on church government, as practiced by the Puritans generally.
Sure. Yeah, so the Puritans came over and they were pretty well. Michael Winship of the University of Georgia has a good book on this subject, and he argues that really this is one area in which the Pilgrims had great influence. Basically, these Puritans came over and adopted congregationalist forms of government. So each congregation is governing themselves. Connecticut, right about 1700, adopts something called the Saybrook Platform, which really adopted kind of a more Presbyterian form of government. So you still have so many important decisions being made by the local congregation, but then within various regions, these congregations or representatives from the congregations, ruling elders, would come together to make certain decisions. So there was an attempt to bring some centralization, I guess, in Connecticut. That never really went much of anywhere down in Massachusetts. I think the core thing to keep in mind is that regardless of the Saybrook platform and that sort of thing, the congregation is absolutely the central institution in Puritan New England. And so you really do have these it's direct democracy where you have people coming together to argue, to debate. Are we going to build a new church? Here are the virtues of that. Here's a vice. And votes are taken. Money's raised voluntarily and that sort of thing. The minister is first among equals, to be sure, but he's just one of many. And I think one of the reasons I continue to emphasize this about the church level and the township level is when England, who largely left America alone until 1764, started to step in and say, okay, now we're going to start regulating our American colonies and telling them what to do. Americans reacted in a way that England's other colonies, England has something like 50 colonies in 1764, 1765. Most of them just accepted this parliamentary intrusion. New England especially said, no way. We govern ourselves, we have rights, and we're going to stand up for our rights.
Oh, that's great. I wish we had time for more. In fact, I'd like to have you on later to explore other aspects of this. Proclaim liberty throughout all the land. Again, the subtitle is How Christianity Has Advanced Freedom and Equality for All Americans. We've just been, honing in on one particular slice of this particular book by Mark David Hall. People can get more information at markdavidhall.org. Thank you, Dr. Hall. All the best.
Thank you very much, Jerry.